9. Hicks began simply enough. What a dog had that a person didn't was not only the ability to discriminate between extremely similar scents, but to locate the source of smells much more precisely than any human being could possibly hope to. It came naturally. What the dog was doing when he located a buried human bone was no different than what he did when he dug up a beef bone that he'd buried in the backyard months before. He doesn't know where he buried it. He simply picks up the scent of a decaying bone on the air. Other animals, such as cats, actually have more scent receptors than dogs. Was Gideon aware of that? But of course, the dog's emotional and behavioral characteristics made it infinitely more amenable to training and working in the field. Interesting enough, and so far so good. But when Hicks got into the chemistry of putrefactive olfaction, chemistry had never been Gideon's strong suit, he rapidly left Gideon behind. Some say that the dog responds to the outgassing of volatile fatty acids and ionic compounds, but I maintain, have always maintained, that it is at the level of the major histocompatibility complex, where unique protein markers form, that differentiation between these markers results in recognition. Ah, said Gideon dully, while Clapper dozed peacefully. Amazing. Once Hicks had a full head of steam going, he was unstoppable. So it wasn't until 5:15 that Clapper and Gideon, dazed with canine lore, were let loose, and 5:45 by the time Gideon climbed Garrison Hill in the gathering mist and got back to Star Castle. In his room, on the table by the casement window, was a note from Julie. Hi, Prof. Hope your session with the Sergeant Major went better than yesterday's. Having put in a hard day's work furthering human knowledge, a few of us have headed for the Bishop and Wolf for a relaxing pre-dinner pint or two. Dinner's not till 7, so come join us. XXXJ. The Bishop and Wolf had been the consortium's pub of choice during its first convening 2 years earlier, and Julie had pointed it out on their walk through Hughtown when they'd arrived. The oldest building in the village, an attractive mid-17th-century stone inn, with pansy-filled window boxes that added a whimsical and unlikely Bavarian air to the facade, and a hanging sign that showed a gigantic, slavering wolf crouching over a bishop's mitre-topped lighthouse. The pub had been named for the Bishop and the Wolf, two of St. Mary's earliest lighthouses. Situated in the center of the village, on the little square where the Strand and the Parade angle together, it was only a 5-minute walk from Garrison Hill, so that it was a few minutes before 6 when Gideon pulled open the door and entered an old English pub, traditional in the extreme, cozy and plain, with nets, glass globes, and odds and ends on the walls, dark, old wooden tables, and a fitting, not really unpleasant fog of beer, wine, and cigarette smoke in the air. They were at 2 pulled-together square tables near the back wall. Julie, Liz Petra, Rudy Walker, Victor Waldo, Donald Pinckney, and Donald's man-eating wife, Cheryl, who looked bored, bony, and exotic in a flared white pantsuit that appeared to have come from the cleaners 5 minutes before. The barmaid was in the act of taking orders, probably for their second round. Only Joey and Kozlov weren't there. Hi, all, Gideon asked the barmaid for a pint of best bitter, and pulled up a chair between Julie and Victor, well out of Cheryl's range.
Oh, Gideon, hi, sweetheart, Julie said. How did it go today? I was just telling everybody about the bone.
A human bone, I understand, Donald said. A tibia?
He was wearing another button on his shirt. I didn't claw my way to the top of the food chain to eat vegetables.
Partial tibia of an adult male, Gideon said, with signs of dismembering at the distal end.
Signs of dismembering? Victor echoed. What would be the signs of dismembering? And so he had to go through it again. His explanation was met with more interest than he might have expected, except for Cheryl, who, still nursing her earlier drink, a straight-up martini, was exchanging lingering, supposedly covert glances with a husky bodybuilder type in a muscle shirt a couple of tables away. An olive on a toothpick
slipped suggestively between her lips and out again.
"And do they have any idea to whom it might belong?" asked Donald, resolutely avoiding taking notice of his wife's goings-on.
"As of now, no. No unsolved murders, no records of any missing people it could belong to. No theories as to whose it is. Still, it's somebody's. Mike introduced me to a dog handler on St. Agnes, and tomorrow we'll go up to Halangi Point and see if we can find any more pieces. If we do, Mike said he'd find me a place at the police station where I can go over them."
"Mike," said Julie, her eyebrows going up. "My goodness, you did get along better with him today, didn't you?"
"Rob was right," Gideon said. "He's actually a pretty decent guy."
The barmaid came with their drinks, ginger beer for Victor, white wine for Julie, Liz, Rudy, and Donald, another martini, with three olives on the toothpick, for Cheryl, and Gideon's ale in the time-honored dimpled glass tankard.
"Murdered and dismembered," Liz said thoughtfully after taking her first sip.
"You don't suppose... I wonder... Well, no, never mind. It's a silly idea."
This naturally prompted interest all around, and she was prevailed upon. It didn't take much prevailing to continue.
"Do you remember the last time we were all in this pub?" she asked.
"Well, everybody but you and Gideon, Julie." She waited, slowly rotating her wine glass on the scarred table. But no one came up with an answer.
"It was the final night, after Edgar gave that talk at Methodist Hall, remember? The one where he got into it with that Pete Williams guy, that rider who hung around all week?"
"Yes, that's right," Cheryl said, her first contribution. "Edgar was livid, deservedly so, if you ask me. That reporter was vicious."
Her attention seemed to have returned to the conversation, but she was paying no attention whatsoever to Gideon. She wasn't even working at not paying him attention. It was simply as if he weren't there.
"She's written me off as a dud," he thought, not certain whether he ought to be relieved or offended. A moment's consideration told him he was relieved. "I am getting old," he thought.
"That reporter treated him in exactly the way he deserved," Rudy said to Cheryl. "Edgar had it all coming to him, and then some." He muttered on a little more, but all Gideon was able to hear was arrogant, condescending. Rudy and Villarreal had not gotten along, Gideon remembered Julie telling him.
"If you think Donald and Joey get under each other's skin, you should have seen Edgar and Rudy," she'd said. Apparently their views on the American wilderness open it up to everyone and everything, according to Rudy, and shut it down to everyone and everything, according to Villarreal, were too much at odds for them to stomach one another, and pot shots and barbs had flown between them all week long, with Rudy doing most of the needling. But Villarreal had been possessed of a ready, caustic wit, Julie had said, and, generally speaking, Rudy had gotten the worst of it. There had been a time, Gideon thought sadly, when Rudy had had a sharp and ready wit too.
"Whether he had it coming to him or not is not the point," Liz said now, gathering steam. "The point is that he said he wanted to kill him, do you remember? He said it right in front of us, twice if I remember right. Well, who's to say?"
"Liz," Julie exclaimed, "you're not serious. You're suggesting Edgar actually did kill him? I mean, murder?"
"That's just what I'm suggesting."
"It wouldn't surprise me," Rudy said, but it was hard to tell if he was serious. There followed a general chorus of doubt and incredulity. Gideon, silent, reflected that, as cheerful and kindly as Liz was, getting her back up was obviously not a good idea, even if you went out and got eaten by a bear afterward. And she stuck to her guns.
"I am serious. Hear me out now. Has anybody heard anything about Williams since that night?"
She stared challengingly at each of them in turn, and everyone admitted that they hadn't.
"Don't look at me," Gideon said. "I never heard of him at all until the day before yesterday."
"All right," Liz said. "Nobody's heard of him since then. Has anyone heard anything about the book he was working on? Has it come out? We all keep up with the environmental literature,
We'd certainly have read about it. A book like that, it would have made a splash.
No, they allowed. They hadn't heard news of the book. Still.
Cheryl, let me have your BlackBerry, Donald said to his wife.
What for?
Just let me have it.
Jesus,
she sighed, digging it out of her purse.
This was definitely not a marriage made in heaven, Gideon thought. Donald took the device.
It should be easy enough to settle. We'll Google him and see if he turns up.
Google a name like Pete Williams, Rudy said. You'll get a million hits.
Donald frowned.
That's a point. Does anybody know where he's from?
London, said Liz. But that's not much help either. Does anybody remember the name of the book? No? Well, does anybody know the names of any of his other books?
There weren't any other books. This was his first one, Victor said.
You mean he wasn't a professional writer? Donald asked.
I assumed.
He published a few magazine articles, Victor said, putting down his ginger beer. But he was... what was he?
An auto mechanic.
An auto mechanic? Donald said, deeply aggrieved. I gave him hours of my time.
Yes, he worked in a garage, said Victor. But he was a student at one of the colleges. He'd been working on that book of his in his spare time for years. We got to talking about it when he interviewed me. He asked me for advice on publishing, and I gave him some suggestions for...
Movers and Shakers of the Earth, Cheryl said. That was the name of it.
That's it, Donald agreed. Using his pinky, he punched it in on the tiny keyboard and waited.
Yes, it's...
No, it's nothing. It was a chapter in a book by Alistair Cook, that's all. But it's not a book title on its own.
His serious expression as he looked up at the others suggested he'd discovered something of significance.
It never came out, and it's not scheduled to come out in the foreseeable future.
Is that right? Victor said, eyes wide, head swiveling from person to person.
Now, wait a minute, Julie said. A lot of books never come out. That doesn't mean the author's dead, and a lot of books take more than 2 years to write.
I can vouch for that, Gideon muttered.
Liz turned to him.
Look, you said the bone was from an adult male. Why couldn't it be him?
I didn't say it couldn't be. I don't have any real reason to think it isn't. But I also don't have any real reason to think it is. You have to admit it's an awfully long shot, based on pretty flimsy evidence, or rather non-evidence.
You don't have any other hypotheses to go on, Liz said.
That's true enough.
You could always mention it to Sergeant Mike tomorrow, Julie suggested. He'll certainly know how to look into it if he wants to.
Very good, I'll do that, Gideon said, searching for another subject to move on to. So how'd the poker game go after I left last night?
Awful, said Donald, at the same moment as Victor said, great, which effectively answered Gideon's question.
Will you be joining us tonight? Donald asked.
I don't think so, Gideon said with a grin. Can't afford it.